Last month, Amtrak Cascades 501 derailed on its inaugural trip from Seattle to Portland. Three people died when the train plunged over a bridge onto a highway in Pierce County. Almost 100 more people were hurt. Amtrak has promised to pay all the bills for cleanup and medical expenses, but that's not what happened in 2015.
Breaking news, a fatal train derailment in the city of Philadelphia. An Amtrak train with 243 people on board went off the rails. Five people dead tonight, and at least 130 people were taken to hospitals in the area, six of them critically injured.
And those numbers eventually would rise to eight people dead, more than 200 injured. My next guest was on that train. Josh Gottbaum is a guest scholar at the Brookings Institute. He has spent his career working on disaster response and relief. And he wrote a piece for The Washington Post called "I Survived an Amtrak Crash. This week's victims are in for a rude awakening." Josh Gottbaum, welcome to KUOW.
Glad to be here.
What were you doing on that train that day?
Well, it was 9:30 at night, so I was doing what any self-respecting workaholic would do. I was sending emails.
When did you first know something was wrong?
First, you heard this really loud screech. And so I looked up and realized that the car was turning. So the screech was from the brakes, and we were on a turn. And the train was falling on its side, going off the tracks. My first thought was, we just left Philadelphia. We're near the river. Are we going into the river, et cetera? And then we went off the track. The lights went out. The train went through the dirt on its side. The windows popped out. The car was full of dust. And the seats came off the floor because of the force. And so everybody was thrown. I was kind of lucky. Me and the person next to me were kind of covered by seats. The woman behind me was crushed by her seat, and the guy two rows in front of me was thrown from the car and killed. So the first reaction was, am I dead? And then I realized probably not. And then the question is, anything broken? I didn't think so. And so then we just we were in the car. The car was on its side. The seats were in piles. It was completely dark. And people started looking for their luggage and trying to figure out how to get out. And fortunately, since we were in the middle of the car, we couldn't go off the end because it's hard to walk down the aisle when there's no aisle and the car is on its side. But an enterprising guy who was in much better shape than me climbed up on a pile of seats, pushed out the window that was on the other side, which was now the roof, pulled himself up. And so we were able to help people out of the car by pushing them up a pile of seats. And then he would pull them up onto the top of the car. And at that point, the police came. And it was scary in part because people were woman, a row in front of me, her arm was deeply gashed, another was broken, and a fire started under the car. And so I was afraid that we were all going to just be asphyxiated by the fire or burned up or whatever. But so it was terrifying, but short-term terrifying.
You said you wondered how hurt you were. What were your injuries?
It turned out that I had broken ribs. I had scratched corneas. Couple of other bruises, and that my knee had been jammed by the accident. I had a knee that was arthritic but working okay, and the accident kind of pushed the bones together. So now, a couple of years later, I have repaired ribs, my eyes have healed, and I have a new knee.
I consider myself
pretty lucky.
Pretty lucky, yeah, I hear that. What did you want from Amtrak?
Oh, well, what I would have liked was a prioritization of safety in the first place. I ran Hawaiian Airlines for 2 years, and in the airline industry, safety is a priority, both because the airlines want to do it and because the FAA requires it. So they prioritize safety. They try to make things safe. Amtrak, by comparison, had a safety system called positive train control that they had installed but had not turned on in Philadelphia because legally they weren't required to turn it on until the end of the year. So if the accident had happened 8 months later, it wouldn't have happened. Similarly, at Cascade 501, the track had the safety system installed.
This is the derailment in Pierce County.
Yes.
Yes,
yeah.
Here.
Mm-hmm. However, Amtrak hadn't put on a train that had the system installed in it because they didn't have to do it till next year. So the first thing I would have liked is prioritization of safety, in which case the accident wouldn't have happened. But once the accident does happen, then what you want is preparation and compassion, and they just didn't do it. When the police and the fire and the folks in Philadelphia were great, they got us off the train. They got us in the yard. They got us to hospitals where we were checked, et cetera. But I was in Jefferson Hospital in Philly for 6 hours before I met anyone from Amtrak. And that person said, my job is just to put you in a cab to 30th Street Station and somebody there will tell you what's going on. That turned out not to be true because they hadn't prepared. So they had a very nice person in the train station who passed out a form that they had just developed. They had not prepared for this at all. So one thing I would have liked is prioritization. Second thing that would have been nice is a little compassion. The third thing, which I did write about in the Washington Post, is that the Congress of the United States, in its infinite lack of wisdom, not only didn't require Amtrak to put on safety systems, but it also limited the compensation that Amtrak would have to pay people for the damages they went through. Their lives were disrupted, their lives were lost, et cetera. And so there was a long judicial process. The CEO of Amtrak said, we're taking full responsibility, and that just plain wasn't true.
How much money were you looking for?
There was a process to figure out what people lost in terms of income and medical expenses, et cetera. And that was a very careful and very professionally done process. It was done under court order by two judges. And so in everybody's case, they said, we think your damages are this, or we think your damages are that, et cetera. However, Congress put a cap on the total Amtrak would be required to pay. So as a result, what the judges decided people's damages were was not what they got. They got a fraction of it.
Do you mind telling us your personal numbers, or would you rather not?
I cannot. As a legal matter, in order to join this process, I had to agree to make not to disclose any of the details of it.
Really? Why is that?
I don't know, but my suspicion, as I say, the great frustration here is that Amtrak publicly announces to the world and holds press conferences and makes statements and says, we are going to be fully responsible. And then they run a process which is not responsible. And so part of the reason why I wrote the article in the Post is that it's too late for the victims of Cascade 501 to have prevented the accident, which Amtrak could have done just by turning on the safety system. But it's not too late for them to be adequately compensated for whatever their losses are, their damages, their medical expenses, their loss of wages, et cetera. But that's going to take the Congress of the United States not only not shutting itself down at the end of this week, but changing the law.
Well, it's been almost 3 years since your derailment in Philadelphia. As I said, Amtrak pledged to pay all the cleanup and medical expenses for our derailment near Tacoma. And what do you expect the victims in Pierce County will actually receive in comparison to what they're being promised?
What happens is Congress passed a cap of $200 million. Which is the maximum that a passenger or a railroad has to pay if in any particular accident. So if the combined losses of the families of the three people who died and the more than 100 people who had medical expenses and lost wages and whatever, et cetera, are more than $200 million, then guess what? They're not going to – then Amtrak is not going to fully put them back to where they were as if they could. And my view is that's a shame. It shouldn't be that way.
We're talking with Josh Gottbaum, who's with the Brookings Institute, but also you have personal experience with disaster prevention response. You ran Hawaiian Airlines. If you were running Amtrak, what would you change?
Oh, a lot of things. One is there's a federal agency that reviews disasters. It's called the National Transportation Safety Board. They're very professional. They work really hard. And one of the things they have repeatedly said about Amtrak is that Amtrak does not have a safety culture, that it's not the first priority. And I'll tell you from having worked with the people at Hawaiian Airlines, they have a safety culture. They are very professional. And so one thing is just making it a priority. One of the reasons I'm hopeful is that the former chief executive of Delta Airlines, Richard Anderson, is now the co-chief executive of Amtrak. So I'm hoping that he'll take even a little bit of the professionalism and the safety consciousness that there is in the airline industry and give it to Amtrak. It would be nice to prioritize that. It would also be nice if they, like the airline industry, if they practiced responding to disasters and practiced the kind of compassion that they don't seem to have. I also ran an agency called the Pension Benefit Guarantee Corporation, which pays people's pensions when companies go bankrupt. And so people are not generally happy to deal with the PBGC. The folks at PBGC are really professional. They deliver pension checks without a hitch to, you know, several million people. But from time to time, they make mistakes. So what happens when they made a mistake? The answer is they admitted it and they made it right. They apologized. I signed personally, you know, thousands of letters of apology, and they compensated people for what their actual damages were. That's the second piece of what I'd like to see from Amtrak. I'd like to see more professionalism. I'd like to see prioritization of safety. And I'd like to see the kind of compassion and concern from our national railroad that we get from our national airlines.
In your experience, Josh, what makes a big transportation company, an airline, a railroad, what makes that company more compassionate or less compassionate and accountable? Is it how much legislation or shareholders or the human being at the helm?
I think it all matters. I will tell you that when I came to Hawaiian Airlines, I didn't need to tell those folks to be compassionate. They were great. They are great, et cetera. And partly over years and years and years, folks have worked to improve their sensitivity to customers. They recognize that people could fly a different airline. They treat them like people. They work hard. Amtrak apparently works on the theory that folks are captive. And so I'm hoping that over time, and it doesn't happen immediately, but I'm hoping that over time, the new management at Amtrak will make both safety as a priority and compassion as a priority. I'll tell you one other story. I used to be an investment banker and had as a client the guy who ran British Airways. And British Airways started as a government agency and then became a private company. And what the chief executive, his name was Colin Marshall, did is he said, we are now in a world in which we have to be competitive. We have to treat people like customers. And so he sent everybody at British Airways to customer training, everybody. And that's the kind of priority that it would be nice to see.
Josh, two more questions, please. Number one, what is your advice to victims of the Pierce County derailment, the loved ones, and as we said, 100 or so people hurt?
One is, my heart goes out to you all. I've actually had a couple of conversations with a couple of folks because of my experience. It is my first piece of advice is take care of yourself and recognize that just because you are you're off the train, that you can't, that you must make still be shaken up. And so take care of yourself. Pay attention. Tell your family members to give you a little room, because it really does change how you deal with people. Second thing is, if you have been damaged and your life has been disrupted, interview some lawyers and find someone who is also compassionate and also professional, who can represent you and make sure that they do for you the best that can be done for you. So first, talk to your family members, then talk to a lawyer.
Finally, Josh, you still take Amtrak. Why is that?
Because it's still the safest way to get from two places. I used to tell people that when I was – at one point, I got a pilot's license myself, and I flew, and I said, flying a commercial airplane – flying on a commercial airline, and it's true for Amtrak, the greatest danger you're in is when you're driving to the station. Amtrak is still safer by far than me driving from here to New York or whatever, et cetera. And most of the time, they're fine. It's in the unusual circumstances that test folks' souls, and that's those unusual circumstances that I hope that Richard Anderson, the new co-CEO of Amtrak, will help improve.
Scholar and economist Joshua Gottbaum survived the Amtrak 188 derailment in Philadelphia almost 3 years ago. Used to run a transportation company himself, Hawaiian Airlines, and we are tweeting out a link to his piece called "I Survived an Amtrak Crash. This Week's Victims Are in for a Rude Awakening," in reference to the Pierce County derailment that happened last month. Josh, good to talk with you. Thank you for this.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. Take care.
You too. You can read about that at KUOW. We're tweeting out a link to that piece at KUOW. Thanks for tuning in. By the way, Amtrak, of course, we reached out to Amtrak for comment, and they said that their family assistance work had been reviewed by the National Transportation Safety Board for the Philadelphia derailment, and that their work in the Cascades derailment here is ongoing.